Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
No!
Oh! Now, no need to pretend. I know you are awake. You've been rebuilding your power for days. Your metal body is fascinating.
Wow, Scaramouche, I don't know you, sir. You're being very creepy.
I am Kaltoris of Arior. The moment I witnessed your descent from the heavens, I knew our ancestors had brought you to my land for a reason. Destiny.
Whoa! Hey, please don't dismantle me. I'll tell you anything you want to know about Starfleet. I'll give you all their codes. Yeah, right there.
I will not rest until you are fully restored.
Wait, so I'm not a prisoner? Okay, sure. Just keep doing whatever you were doing and get to the left side, too. Yes.
Smoochies.
Lemon smooch?
Smoochies are those citrus, oranges and clementine.
Color. Oh, yeah, right.
Like halos.
Halos. Mm. Right, so you can get halos, like, all the time, but, like, you know, you don't really want to.
All right. Did we get all
They're
our
getting
silly,
better now,
silly
though.
Bits out?
Get our silly bits out
yeah,
of our bones.
We can save this for like the fruit cast.
Did we get
the
all
fruit
the
cast?
Get all the citrus talk.
It's always a fruit cast when we're here.
Citrus talk concluded. All right. Okay.
I think I got it.
All right. In that case,
grapefruit.
All right.
Grapefruit.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Pomegranate.
That's not a citrus.
Pomegranate.
Pomelo.
I didn't hear you say citrus. I thought you just said fruit.
I said, are we done with the citrus talk? So can we start the podcast? Anyway, okay.
Not
so
the pomegranate.
What we'll do is we will start the podcast.
It's got Star Trek.
It's got Star
Trek. 153.
The It's Got Star Trek podcast. Thank you, Jesse. The 153rd episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, in which we
this
get to discuss what I found to
I
be.
I knew it. What? You found it to be very charming, didn't you?
I bet.
I'm delighted by this television program that we get to watch week after week.
By Lower Decks in general, yes.
Yeah.
This episode it feeds into that charm.
Right.
It accentuates, it amplifies the existing degree of charm and the what I like about this show.
Would you say it's accurate? You like this episode in a similar way that you liked that Strange New World episode where they went to the fantasy land, where they went to the storybook fairy tale land,
Elysium or whatever.
Yeah, whatever that one was called. You like them for similar reasons?
I think probably. I think I know what you're getting at. I know what you're hinting at, Dan. Yeah.
The Aeolus.
What I'm putting down.
Aeolus.
This sort of like. Wistful? Is wistful the right word for it? I don't know if wistful is the right
word.
Well,
okay. So, this is episode, season 3, episode 7, a mathematical...
Wistful is not the right word.
A mathematically perfect redemption.
Math is cool.
Which is, I should have guessed, I don't know,
math
I didn't,
is
last
cool.
week when I knew that, yeah, I knew the yeah, title, yeah. I didn't guess
you
that it was going to be a peanut butter episode.
Peanut hamper. They call it peanut butter.
Well, because there's that line in the, so peanut hamper first showed up in the season 1 finale.
That's right, yeah, right.
No season small parts. And there's a throwaway line in there about Peanut Hamper selecting. Yeah. She selected that name because it's a mathematically perfect name.
Right.
Yeah.
So a mathematically perfect redemption.
When it starts out, she doesn't have a name exactly.
Yeah.
She comes up with it or something.
Yeah. Or she had the name, but I think she told the story of how she came up with it.
Okay.
But yeah, so I should have guessed. My brain is slow.
Last week you were like, Dan's going to like this episode because it has the word math.
And the episode starts with the last episode of the first season. Like it starts.
Yes,
we see the events
intercut with the external viewpoint.
Yeah,
which I thought was pretty cool. I got super excited. Like the intro was different, and then this whole scene.
It was funny though.
when you start to realize you're like, wait, this looks familiar, and then you're like, oh wait a second, this is from the first season finale. And you're like, what's going on here? And then it like clicks in your brain. You're like, oh, we're gonna finally see What happened to Peanut Hamper?
I did a side-by-side comparison with that and episode 10, season 1.
Did you do screen grabs or just audio comparison?
I watched them back-to-back over and over again. So, it was the same episode right down to everything, except up until, it says something about, they're like, Peanut Hamper. There's some dialogue at the beginning where they're showing the outside of the ship being all lasered up by the shit.
Yeah.
And then they go, Peanut Hamper. And that part is different from the season one, episode 10. But then when they go, Peanut Hamper, then it cuts to the scene where they're having that conversation. And that's shot for shot, word for word, sound bite for sound bite.
What about when they go, Peanut Hamper?
Yes, but that's not till later. But that's the same as the show, but then when she zaps off the ship, it's different, and then that's when we sort of see her floating around, and it's going off into their own thing, and it does this sneaky thing where suddenly, so it's like, it does this crazy thing where it's like, last time on this show, and they show you...
Previously, on Star Trek,
and instead of doing a recap, like, montage, they do, like, mix in with, like, new footage with footage that I already had, and somehow blend it into the opening of the episode, and then the credits start rolling.
So the music was a completely different musical arrangement of the opening theme that was all slow and epic.
So I thought that transition, that whole intro was really funny. Yeah, I thought that whole intro was really smooth, and like I was like that was pretty well done.
So Jesse thinks it was funny. You think it was smooth?
It was very well.
I thought it was great.
Yes,
funny, smooth, and great. Kind of like my poops.
Okay. Yes.
But I forgot that was when I thought they were making something up because like Rutherford at one point goes like, but someone has to take it to the shield.
Yeah.
Oh, I got it. One illegal virus. Someone has to take it to the shield.
Isn't that how he says it though?
That's how he says it in the first one too.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't remember him sounding that ridiculous.
First season of Star Trek is always a little goofy.
A little goofy.
I kind of remembered it like that.
So
I believed
it. But
yeah.
I bought it.
Excellent start. I love those moments in a television show, especially when it's matured to the point with its existing own internal lore. And in the case of Lower Decks, there's Lower Decks lore and all of Star Trek lore, right? That all loops in. But that moment where you're like, I know what they're doing. Oh, but you don't. That's part of what makes it's fun in that you're like, ooh, in my brain, I remember thinking, oh, I wonder if we'll ever see what happened to Peanut Hamper. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, oh, they're going to show us. But then there's no way to predict what's about to happen because it's pretty batshit fucking crazy.
But the bulk of the episode, though, is it's similar to that Strange New Worlds episode, Elysium, whatever, in the sense that they're both these... It's sort of like a summary of a story already told, you know, because Elysium, it's like a fairy tale. It's like that story has been told a million times over in whatever way you want to look at it. And just like this is kind of like the classic, like, okay, I went to like some land and I don't know anyone and they're doing me and oh, we make friends. And then
they're playing around with all the tropes.
There's only a couple moments that were kind of satirical, but most of it was just kind of like, well, how would the character of Peanut Hamper manage in this tried and true story that's been told a million times already? And so that's why I was kind of like, okay, we've seen the story already.
It's like what happened to Boba Fett on that Boba Fett show. He got rescued by the sand people.
Yeah. It is very similar to that, actually.
He became part of their gang.
I guess you're...
And then he grew to love their cause, right? That's an excellent point.
Yeah, he totally bought into that shit.
Except the whole joke here, and I think... that this is what's controversial because I can report after a thorough review of the internet, I can report that this episode has been controversial.
I didn't think it was controversial.
What I mean to say is the response to it has been divided. That's a fact. And a lot of people love this episode. And I probably fall on that side. A lot of people really did not like this episode.
I was kind of neutral to this episode. I was the same. Also, I was thinking maybe it's partially influenced. My saying it's similar to the Strange New Worlds episode is because I had a similar reaction myself. So where it was just kind of like, it was all right. I didn't dislike it. I didn't overly enjoy it. I thought it was fine. It didn't do a lot for me.
Well,
but I didn't hate it. I thought there was a cool couple moments like, you know, the whole like weird sex scene that happened not once.
I knew you were going to mention that.
That happened. Yeah. First of all, you see this fucking like bird orgasm, which was really weird. Because
those turtles have to get the hell out of there. They take flight. Those turtles.
And then right after they have sex.
The second time, a whole bunch of turtles.
Yeah. So yeah. he has, they have sex, and then they go and he shows them those old ships from his ancestors. And then for some reason, they have that same sort of revelatory sex moment where it's like, right. it's all inspirational. It's like,
I'm gonna make you forget.
They're making love. This is so beautiful. But then they do it two times in a row, which is like unusual. Usually it's like, okay, you do it once, we get it, you had sex. But this one, they made it a point to be like, we're going to show you that weird scene again. Of him kissing this exocomp, which is also funny because, like, the whole idea of, like, you know, exocomp is a sentient being. Why not? You know, there's no limits to what species people can have sex with. And then also, of course, the twist ending of, like, how Peanut Hamper is a total asshole still.
Yeah.
And so there were parts of it that I really thought were clever, but it's kind of like, in some ways it was like those horror movies where like it builds up and the whole point of watching it is that crazy.
All right.
Point
we have a
end.
Lot of things to go over.
Yeah.
Because I think you make a bunch of excellent points. And what's interesting is a lot of the things you mentioned are the things that, like, depending on your vibe, some people are super digging that they went that direction. Other people are like, this was stupid, or this was dumb, or this was a problem. Let's start with the very first thing that's sort of unusual about this episode is that it is very rare, perhaps, I don't know, I've been looking through all the episode lists and stuff. There are not a lot of Star Trek episodes that remove the focus from the main crew.
They didn't appear until 16 minutes and 30 seconds.
Lower Decks.
They didn't appear until 16 minutes and 30 seconds into the episode streaming off of Paramount.
Now, there are a ton of episodes that will shift focus to one main character, you know, Worf or Odo or somebody, like, and they go off on an adventure, and so you're dealing with lots of different characters in a different environment,
right,
but you've still got the one main character. I think Lower Decks from TNG is probably one of the ones that best fits the bill. However, they're still on the Enterprise, so you're still seeing the other characters, and it's the same environment. It's just that you're really focused on these other characters. But that is one of the unusual aspects of this episode, is that it, until the latter part of the episode, it wholly is divorced from the story of the Sarita.
And that was kind of like that Lost episode. There was that episode, Lost episode that did that.
I know, yeah.
It's an indicator that they're a mature enough show that they can do that. They've built up their sort of world and
their repertoire,
and they can get away with doing that. I mean, we're buying it.
I'm buying
it. We're digging it. Some people are digging it, at least. So they have enough, clout.
It had those two things going for
clout,
one.
Is that the word? Capital.
Capital.
Social capital.
Yeah.
Per capita capital. It had those two things where the one what you just mentioned where it focused on a different character, but it also had that goes kind of hand in hand with that idea where the plot is totally divorced from anything that was going on, like ongoing stuff. So you kind of had a half episode like that in Breaking Bad. There was a whole episode where Walter White was doing his thing, and there was this fly in the room.
Right, that episode was called The Fly.
Yeah, it was called The Fly.
And that's a controversial episode too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's split.
Yeah, and so now that one you're focusing on what, like, the main character, so it's not separate from that respect. But it is the same in as in Lost and this one, where the plot is just, it's not furthering the main plot, and I think sometimes people get impatient with that. And I don't have a problem.
Even though this is an episodic show.
It's an episodic show.
It is, I know, but
it's
like
got soft continuity, soft plot arcs over the course of seasons and stuff like that.
Right. No, and so for me, the idea that you have an episode that doesn't continue the plot, that doesn't bother me. Like, I don't have a problem with that. And I know some people, I'm
with Jesse too, that I do think it's a sign of the maturity of the television program and the confidence in the writers. And that's not the only example of that in this episode. There's a lot that they go back to. The Drukmani captain, played by J.G. Hertzler of Martok fame, he was in the first season, I think it was Temporal Provocations. He was the Drukmani captain. It's the same guy, right? Mm. So he's back. So that's a character they brought back from lore. Jeffrey Combs, at the very end, he's Edgemus,
the evil computer,
which we can talk about that more later, possibly. But like that was great.
Was it Edgemus or Agamus?
It's probably Agamus.
Yeah. Who plays the old bird?
In my mind, I think of Agitate, so Agamus.
Cal Torres is the old bird, which sounds like another word that's naughty.
Are you talking about clitoris?
I didn't say that.
Or clitoris?
Nobody says that.
People think it.
Somebody said cloitorous once. I heard someone say cloitorous.
What sort of people are you hanging out with?
I've heard that story before.
Oh, you heard that?
Sounds familiar. Yeah.
It's the only time I've ever heard
the story, but it sounds
familiar. It's the only time I ever heard someone pronounce it that way, and even I knew. I was like, "Wait, that's not right."
You're not even like reading it.
Even my dad. Well, why are you touching me like that?
What?
I did not say that.
All right, trigger warning. Caltoris. Caltoris.
And his son.
That might have been too far.
his son, Raw Dog. Raw Dog, quote unquote. AKA Raw Dog.
Raw Dog.
That's okay. I have him in my notes as well.
That sounded like that to me. I know who it wasn't him because the name of the actor was Harry Shum Jr.
Shum?
S-H-U-M. Maybe it's Gordon. Harry Shum! Harry Shum played Raw Dog.
Raw Dog?
Excellent.
egg salad. But it sounded like the guy who was he played the manager guy in the show, the short-lived but wonderful show Party Down, Ken Marino.
That show's coming back.
Is it coming back?
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, they've already filmed it.
Who's going to be in it?
Most of the people you care about, but missing some of the people you care about.
Okay, so when I was writing in Party Down, the Google filled it out for me, and it said,
is that the catering show?
Yes.
Yeah. So when I was typing in, because I was
Adam Scott.
Yeah.
So I was looking up
Ken Marino.
Yeah. So the actor
at all.
So the actor
Maraschino cherries.
The actor I was looking up was Ken Marino, and so when I was typing Party Down into Google, it autofilled to reboot, and I was like, I didn't think much of it, but you're saying it is rebooting. So yeah, that's cool. Anyways, it sounded like Ken Marino to me, but it wasn't him. At all.
No. It was not
San Marino.
It was not Ken Marino.
But it was Raw Dog.
It was Raw Dog. Raw Dog.
I love Raw Dog. I know, but Raw Dog is
Sky
funny.
Snake.
I love in shows, speaking of birds, when they have that hawk.
Speaking of birds.
When they do that hawk noise.
It's always the red-tailed hawk.
It's always that one hawk. Yeah. It's always that
because
one hawk
noise. They always do it with bald eagles because bald eagles' cry sounds like really lame. It's all like. It's like a pathetic sounding thing. Right. So when you want it to sound majestic, you got to use the red-tailed hawk.
It's almost equivalent to that Wilhelm scream.
It's exactly equivalent to the Wilhelm scream.
The Wilhelm scream is a little sillier, but it is ridiculous to have one hawk scream.
People have stopped using the Wilhelm scream as much because it draws too much attention.
I'm trying to remember where I was watching something that had it recently.
But. Lord of the Rings. The Two Towers. It's in the Two Towers for sure. The Battle of Helm's Deep. But it's also in hundreds and hundreds of other movies.
Like every movie ever.
Starting from the 80s anyway. I think that's when it came from the 60s, but it became popularized by audio engineers in the 80s.
And they just did it as like an inside joke. That
they did
even
it in Star Wars.
Even for
that
like,
really started it.
They did it in serious movies. It's like an inside joke that somehow they could get away with, like in serious shit.
They did
it in
like every Star Wars movie.
Yeah. So, yeah. When Boba Fett fell off the thing. Wait, spoiler alert for a spoiler for Return of the Jedi.
Spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie.
But when Boba Fett gets knocked into the thing.
And we got onto this topic because of birds?
Oh, yeah, because...
These are like an owl species, their name is the...
Aurori. Well, so they're called...
Aurori.
So they're called the Aurelians. Let me reword. Okay, you're right. They're from...
Because you're going to mention that very funny line of Peanut Hamper, right?
Yeah, the poor man's Aurelians.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so they're from the planet... They're from the planet Aureolus.
Aureolus. Aureolus.
Aureolus. No, it's Aureolus.
No, it's not Aureolus like the... A circle of flesh around a nipple. It's Aureolus.
The Aurori must protect their way of Aurori. I am Calatoris of Aureori.
It was Boimler who said Aureolus.
Well, where are they from? Aureori. They're from
Aureori.
When he says I am Caltaurus of Aureori, does he mean is that the name of their planet or is he an Aureorian?
Both are true. Just like we're past, humans and we live on the planet Hume.
Hume. Speaking of which, what did Quark say when Ensign Harry S.L. Kim agreed to a bad deal? No. What did Quark say?
Okay, I get it. This is set up to a vaudeville style joke.
What did Quark
set in the Star Trek universe?
What, just in case the audience missed it, what did Quark say when Ensign Harry S.L. Kim agreed to a bad deal?
What did Quark say when Ensign Harry S.L. Kim agreed to a bad deal?
Some humans never earn.
Okay. All right. Did you read that in like Highlights magazine?
No, I made it up.
Was that a Bazooka Joe joke?
No, I got off a popsicle. No.
Oh, was it like on the popsicle stick?
No, I made it up. Some humans. That's mighty funny. Some humans never earn because he had a bad deal. He didn't, you know, because earn sounds like.
That's one of those rules of acquisition.
The best part about the best jokes are the ones you have to explain in detail.
Okay,
even better jokes are the ones you have to explain that you choose to explain, even though an explanation is entirely unnecessary.
Because
that's the epitome of humor. That's the top of the mountain.
I gotta explain it till somebody pretends to laugh.
Yeah.
So it says in the distant past, the Ariori were a spacefaring species. So they were called the Ariori. They're from Ariori. Are they Ariorian? Are they Ariori? Are they Ariori-less? Or Ariori?
Our audience, I can sense, even though we're recording, I can sense the future, the chronoton waves are traveling back through time. And I am sensing that our audience is getting frustrated with us saying
Ariori. Ariaria?
I'm getting impatient.
Are they from Ariaria?
Well, how about this?
It's like there's too many vowels and like my ears need to rest.
So,
the Archduke of fucking Salzburg?
Damn.
Too many notes.
There's need more, you know, consonants.
Too many notes.
You need consonants to, you know, to have a. Some sort of cadence.
Okay, so
tell that to I was about to say tell that to the Welsh, but I think they got the opposite problem.
So the Ariories,
well, they use their consonants as vowels. That's
you said the C word.
I like a brave people.
The Ariori,
I like a linguistically brave people like the Welsh.
They
got dragons too. That's pretty tight.
Yeah.
The Ariories,
Arthur Pendragon.
They are a bird people. The Aralians.
They're Ornithians.
Ornithoids.
Ornithoids. That's good. So, I like that. Fuck that avian bullshit. You know ornithoids.
You know what areology is?
Is that like where you like
it's the study of Mars?
Oh, I thought you were going to say the study. Well, because of Ares, because of that.
So
the Greeks and the fucking Romans.
So the point is Arioris sounds.
Planets are only named after the one side.
So it's
for the most part.
So it's fucked up that you have the Arioris, which are birds, but you also have the Aralians, which are other birds.
Aralians, yeah.
They're both bird people, and they both have a really similar name. That's not to be confused with. Aurelian.
Can you say that in a Baltimore
That's
accent?
Not to be confused with Aurelian, who is a Roman emperor.
Yeah,
Aurelian.
Aurelian walls.
Do you know any of the other bird species? There are a few other bird species. Some
Aurelian
names.
Was a Roman emperor who reigned during the crisis of the 3rd century, from 270 to 275. I don't know what Aurelian walls. What does Aurelian walls mean?
It's probably walls built by Aurelius.
Yeah, they're city walls. Aurelian.
Keep the invaders out.
I don't know if I can do a Baltimore accent. I can say Baltimore.
You do a
Baltimore. You can do a Baltimore accident.
Accident.
That's a psychological.
That's a slip.
Yeah. Was.
All right. So we do go out to an international audience. Baltimore is a
Baltimore.
City.
Baltimore.
It's in Balmer, Maryland.
Balmer is a city, a prominent port city on the east coast of the United States in the state of Maryland.
They have Krebs.
They have Krebs. They like blue Krebs.
They don't talk like that in Baltimore.
Baltimore, no.
Yeah, that's a different one.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, Maryland is one of those states. It's a beautiful state. It's totally worth visiting. Everyone should go to Maryland. It has one peculiarity, though.
It's one of the bluest states in the Union.
When you're driving through Maryland, you will see cars just abandoned on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
Every mile, there's just a car just on the side of the road.
On, like, major interstate highways.
It's peculiar. Too. And people have been coming up with theories as to why this might be for decades.
Maybe they're ruining their car by going too slow in the left lane.
The point is not that cars end up on the side of the road. It's that they stay for a sufficient time to sort of collect. Because, you know, these people aren't, like, stopping all at the same time. So when you're driving down the road and within the span of 45 minutes, you drive by 7 or 8 cars on the side of the road, it stands out.
Maryland was one of those states that didn't have a helmet law for motorcycles like into like the 80s or something. Yeah. I remember as a young child.
When you were driving around on your Harley?
No, because my
dad... Oh, it was an Indian. You drove an Indian?
A what?
It's a type of motorcycle. Oh. I was making a motorcycle joke.
Oh, shit. My dad had a
Triumph?
My dad had a motorcycle and like...
Was it a Ninja?
He would say how like in Maryland you didn't have to wear a helmet.
So he just take his helmet off?
No, I don't think he did. But like...
Your father's a smart
like
man.
The other state was like Maryland and South Carolina didn't have helmet laws. Wow. When is Maryland ever in the same sentence as South Carolina for anything?
Well,
that's a good question. Yeah, I never even thought about it, so probably not that often.
Yeah.
Rule 34.
Back in the day.
Rule 34.
What? Rule 34, Maryland?
Maryland and South Carolina.
Is that what you're suggesting 34. We search on Google?
Rule 34, Maryland, South Carolina.
I don't think that's going to fit.
I suggest we talk more about fucking birds.
I want to hear about Sam the Brave.
I want to hear about bird people.
There were the Zindi avians in Enterprise, although they were extinct, so I think we only ever saw a skull of the Zindi avians.
The birds went extinct?
There's the Betelgeuseans. Which I believe, I can't remember which movie. I think it was Star Trek The Motion Picture. They were just like a background. They were like a background.
That's some
alien.
TOS drinks.
Yeah. I think it was The Motion Picture they were in, but it could have been something else. The Aurelians that Dan referenced earlier, those are like your Star Trek The Animated Series bird people. Mm-hmm. They're all like tall and long necked. We've seen them on lower decks in the aviary on like, what was that, Starbase 82 or something when they were having that. Car chase and everything, and they.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Those are Aurelians, and then you've got Dr. Migglymoo, who he doesn't appear to be an Aurelian. He seems to be his own kind of bird person species. Bird person.
They should have.
I don't think we've heard his species.
They should have more dinosaur bird species things like Velociraptor.
Remember those guys on it was TNG, and there was like the lizard people and the dog people, and they were like eating each other.
Yes. Yeah, you bring this up frequently.
I know, it's fascinating.
We should perhaps actually review that episode.
I have mentioned that several times.
Yeah.
We should review that episode.
Well, what else we should do? It's kind of a silly episode. We should take a quick break. Take a quick break.
You said brack.
Take a break.
Take a
break. Take a break.
Take a break, bra.
Take a break.
Take a break,
bra. Take a molly break.
For real. I've already taken my break.
We're very talented people. All right, we will be right back.
For real, we mean it.
All right, we're back from the break. Mm. Break time has concluded. Back to performance time.
Some humans never earn.
And you are one of the
Dag, yo.
Oh, shit, yo.
Dang.
So meanwhile, back at the episode.
All right, let's talk about a couple of the other things that I think are the controversial.
I don't want to.
Maybe controversial isn't correct. Maybe it's better to say divisive.
Divisive? Divisive? Which is it?
It's both.
It works either way.
It's both.
It's dismissive. It's not dismissive.
So Dan, you did a good summary where you like kind of poked through all those, but we already discussed that the lack of focus on the main character, and even when the main characters show up, they are in a purely supportive role to the existing plot line.
Isn't it interesting that they were all on the bridge?
Yeah, they're all hanging out on the bridge.
Since when did they get to be on the bridge?
That's a good...
It's crazy.
I didn't even think about that.
Were they all on the bridge? Was Rutherford on the bridge? Was Tendi on the bridge?
Tendi was on the bridge.
Tendi's doing her senior officer training thing. So.
But Mariner and the other dude...
They're often on the bridge just because, you know, they're...
They just get, like,
the command line.
In,
yeah.
Rotated in.
They're doing stuff up there. Anyway, so, yes, that's one point. Another point that you alluded to, Dan, was this whole business with the redemption or lack thereof of Peanut Hamper. Mm-hmm. And I agree, this threw me off a little bit the first time I watched it, because the culture of Lower Decks, of Star Trek more broadly, but especially Lower Decks, has been to go against the cynical grain, and they always have those jokes, like the classic one right from the episode 2 of the first season when Rutherford's trying out the different jobs and he doesn't want to be in security anymore, and they're all super supportive of it, and but they set it up as if they're going to be mad at him because that's what you would expect in unfortunately in our culture, right? And so Lower Decks has developed this trope. It's now a Lower Decks trope of like making you think something bad's going to happen, then pulling the rug out from under you. And it's actually everyone's going to be super cool and nice about it. Everyone's like awesome.
It's like that dude that the guy that like stole some part of the computer and hooked it up to his brain. And they were like, okay, we got to get rid of this guy, but we're going to like say that he like did some shit so he gets promoted off of the ship.
Yeah. But like the idea being that normally you'd expect that, and they've done the reverse here.
Yeah.
Because the reverse here is we fully expect, because it's Lower Decks, because it's Star Trek, because we've already been trained to be annoyed by Peanut Hamper, we fully expect this to be an actual, and plus the title of the fucking episode is A Mathematically Perfect Redemption. We expect that to be the end. And when that doesn't happen, it feels like it's going against a lot of what the Lower Deck stuff. I argue what made me start to enjoy it was two factors. First of all, I like the fact that the show is mature enough, again, to use that increasingly tired term. It's mature enough that it can invert its own tropes, right? It can create surprise in the audience by going against what you'd expect from your knowledge of the show, as opposed to the knowledge of media more generally. And the other thing is I think this sets up, even though it was kind of done as a joke towards the end, it really does set up the next time we see Peanut Hamper. It's like lore, right? It's like you know, at some point down the line, you're going to see Peanut Hamper again. Again, maybe she's going to be hanging out with Agamas and plotting something. Who knows? But now they have that possibility. And to me, I'm kind of excited about that possibility of seeing Peanut Hamper again.
I thought that was, honestly, I thought that whole twist thing was one of the more redemptive aspects of the episode to me, because to me it seemed like the episode was this kind of generic, like I mentioned before, this is this generic story that's been told time and time again. The only difference is now we see it through the eyes of this smart ass peanut exocomp, right? And so like,
and owl people.
So owl hockey Ariolians.
Weird owl.
So weird owl. God. Jesus. So for part of the episode, I wasn't really sure what the purpose of it was when I was watching it. But then when the Peanut Hamper turn happened at the end, I was like, I enjoyed that. That was like one of my favorite parts of the episode, is that that happened, because there's some actually hints to that earlier on in the episode. Yeah. Like
when you watch it a second time, you start seeing the little things that jump out.
So at the very beginning, when she had her Wilson ball,
Sophie, she called it Sophie. Sophie.
Yeah. When Sophie, she sold Sophie out
immediately.
She immediately sold Sophie out.
And the funny thing about that is you can be simultaneously like upset that she did that and also be like, no, that's rational thing to do. Right. It would be stupid to not do that.
But it's funny because you're right. It would be you'd. It's a rational thing to do, but in context of the episode, it's almost like foreshadowing in some weird backwards way. Because then also, she told them. When she was, I think it was either she was, I think it was when she was getting captured by the Drukmani. Jesus, Ariori Drukmagios.
Drukmani.
She. I think it was to them where she was like at the very beginning when she was like, "I'll give you the codes," or maybe it was when she landed on the planet. She was like, "I'll give you the Starfleet codes." Like she was afraid. Cal Torres brought out the knife and she thought he was going to start disassembling her. She's like, "I'll give you the Starfleet codes." And then he scratched her and made her feel good.
Just Starfleet codes.
Yeah. Right. And then
she was like in Starfleet for like a day.
Yeah.
And then right when the Drukmani come down at the end, and this is before we find out that she sucks, this is when we think she's being a hero, when they come down after the wedding, when she's wearing that fake beak.
Did you notice that everything had a beak?
And everything had wings.
The goat had a beak, and the snake had a beak. Everything had wings, too.
And of course, that great line, which endears you to Peanut Hamper, when she's like, why do you call it a sky snake? Everything here has wings.
Right.
Like, why wouldn't you just call it a snake?
Yeah. Well, I was starting to think about that because, like, you could almost see that as an artifact of the universal translator, right? Like, because, you think about...
Yeah, what? But the universal translator can't make your language not dumb. Or what was that line you had?
But maybe. But what I'm saying is like, oh, the universal translator is like, oh, it's a snake. Oh, it's flying. So we'll just call it a flying. This is what it translates most closely as in their language. It just so happens that they maybe they wouldn't call. Maybe the Arioris wouldn't call it a flying snake. It's just that was the best translation over into their language.
You have successfully sucked all the humor out of that exchange. Because you're right.
I ruined everything. I ruined it. But you never know. You're right. The universal translator can't make language not dumb. So you might be right too.
I think part of what is so great about her not being redeemed by being revealed as even more scheming than we originally thought, like it's I understand if it left people like not feeling cool.
You said left people.
If it left people not feeling cool. I get it. I liked it, and one of the reasons why I liked it is because in this Lower Decks world, where there is such an emphasis on like doing the nice thing, the peaceful thing, trusting in other people and all that, and how that usually is how you solve the problems. Mm-hmm. It's certainly a very common thread in Lower Decks, that what makes them most vulnerable is they, and this has been touched upon in previous Star Trek, like on TNG and other times in Deep Space Nine. You can become vulnerable by being trusting. By definition, right? But this kind of calls that out in that this crew is able to fight off all these complicated other problems and get through these problems. This one was difficult. They didn't see this one coming because they were willing to give peanut hamper the benefit of the doubt.
The Drukmani call her peanut butter at one point.
Yeah. And for me, that's great. I find it's really interesting to think about that and be reminded about that. And it's one of the challenges you have when you have that philosophy that a lot of us would like to adhere to, that it's always good to give the benefit of the doubt, but it's not without risk. Mm-hmm. And there are people who have very valid arguments that you need to be more paranoid and suspicious to be safe. And there's a debate there. It's not like one's obviously right or wrong. You can have a pretty vigorous debate on both sides of that issue.
The third, I was in the middle of saying the third time that she seemed like she was shady, saving her own ass, is when the Drukmani came down before we found out that she was an asshole. And they're at the wedding when she's wearing the beak. She goes, "Oh no, this is all my fault." And that, which point you'd expect her to follow it up with something like, "Save yourselves. This is all my fault." But she goes, "Oh no, this is all my fault. Don't let them take me." Yeah. So that was another example of her like her sort of looking out for herself.
And also when she doesn't want her husband to come with her into Starfleet.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because you think it's going to be that whole romantic thing, right, where it's like taking the primitive alien onto the starship. Nope. She was like, "No, you wouldn't like it." You
know? Yeah.
I can't take you away from your paradise. It was like burning. Well, it's not quite burning yet.
But. So we that whole thing. She what's it called when you make something, when something stays,
making the beast with two backs.
Making the beast with two backs.
I don't think that's the Shakespearean term.
Yeah, I actually
Othello, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I actually for some reason have a beast with two backs, Othello. Back to back. That's what I wrote in reference to them having sex, two sex scenes straight in a row.
The beast with two backs, back to back.
Yeah,
that's pretty rad.
I wrote that down actually. Isn't that funny?
Be a song title.
That's pretty
beast
clever.
Beast with two backs, back to back. A beast with two backs, back to back. I don't want to sound. That's not the right direction. That's not the right direction. That's not the right direction. But so that was that when she staged that whole thing with the Drukmani, like that was still pretty risky scenario she set up. She did put a lot of effort into trying to make them think that she was a good person because she still could have died. Like she went into that ship, that Drukmani ship, and knocked some people over and broke into. She put herself at risk.
She's pretty confident.
So even though she said they brought them over to blow the planet up and to fuck their shit up, and she had all done that. She said, "Oh, she did all that so she could like pretend to save their ass and show them that she's." But she actually did save their ass. So she is brave.
My argument against that, because that's not how I read it. My understanding was that she was, whether she was right or wrong, I mean, she was proven to be right. She was confident in her plan. And what her plan was specifically to engineer a scenario to get back in the good graces of Starfleet.
That's what I was looking at, engineer.
Starfleet. She wanted a Starfleet ship. She wanted the Cerritos to come and pick her up and take her back in. Mm-hmm. She knew that if she, you know, because she knows how Starfleet operates, she knew that if she did some heroic thing, quote unquote heroic thing, that would increase her chances of being, you know, accepted back into Starfleet.
So it was,
that
totally I mean, worked. It was still,
she liked being in Starfleet. She didn't want to go to prison, and she didn't want to kill herself. She was perfectly fine hanging out on a Starfleet ship. Right?
Okay.
My understanding of the scenario is that she was 100% fully confident, for whatever reason, that she would be able to take over the Drukmani ship and stage this whole thing. What surprised her was when it turned out that the Aurarian ancient ships were still functioning, and that the Drukmani were able to beam over there and start wrecking shit up. Beam. She didn't expect that. And what did she do when that happened? She fucking hid herself under like some rubble. You know, she was like, I'm not helping at all. I'm not being brave now, because she didn't know anything about that ship. She didn't know, expect it to be working. She didn't, it was just not part of her plan. So she immediately did like, there was no bravery involved at any point in this process, I would argue, because I think what limited bravery was, you couldn't even call it bravery. It's just, she is desperate, and this was her plan, and this was her way to get off this planet full of bird farmer, dirt farmer people, or however she referenced them. So anyway, that's how I saw it.
Fair enough.
Counterpoint?
I have no counterpoint other than to say it still was a risky maneuver, but it was completely out of trying to save her own ass. So
yeah,
but you said she had confidence, but you know,
that's my reading of it. That's my literary understanding.
My rebuttal is that fucking ship had some kind of like giant taser blaster.
it was like a multi-prong.
Yeah,
it still made phaser sounds though.
Yeah, right.
It just made like multi-phaser sounds.
It looked like something out of like Quake or something like that. I don't think they had that weapon in Quake, but it looked like a video game.
The ball of lightning thing did look Quakish. The animation in this episode was glorious, right? All of it. The ship-to-ship fighting animation was great. The damage on the Cerritos was wonderfully rendered, and the world of Aurario did look like a paradise. It looked like this wonderful, glorious world.
With flying goats.
We're flying everything. It was like that episode of Rick and Morty where they go to the planet where everything is corn.
Yeah.
Where, you know, everything has corn. Everything's on a cob.
Everything on a cob.
It was like bacteria on a cob. Yeah. Like, anyway.
I don't remember that episode.
I remember it.
So when they did the thing, speaking of the way the episode was presented, when they did the opening sequence and they showed the ship like get all laser blowed up Peanut Hamper was watching the action go down and that little shuttle got blown up and she's like, glad I wasn't there. They did that whole shaky cam thing, like there was as if there was a crew of dudes shakily running around outside in space. That was Battlestar Galactica. But it is funny that camera view is effective and it like makes you feel like you're in the action, but at the same time, really, what is it supposed to be simulating? NYPD Blue is where I remember where the shaky cam thing really started becoming popular in a day. That's what people, I remember, like, that's the first time I heard people talking about the shaky cam. NYPD Blue didn't invent it, but I remember them always talking about it, where it's like, some, instead of being on a tripod or a thingy stand or whatever they use, it's
quad pod,
Quinto, a sex pod, instead of being on a sex pod. Someone would call it a hexapod.
Hexapod?
A sex me pod. But they did the thing where they have someone running around holding a camera, and so it's all shaky because it's just supposed to be in the action. Some dude's running around with the camera, and it's all shaking. Whoa, crazy. It's all you're in the action with the thing happening. That wouldn't happen in space, right? You wouldn't have some crew of people like running around in space, because you can't run around in space.
No, you can't.
It's kind of like a weird, funny derivation of that whole concept, or would it be an integral? But anyways, speaking of math,
it's always math with this guy.
I love math; is great.
It's always high level calculus.
Danny numbers over here.
You told me, you said you like this episode, Jen, because it's called a mathematically perfect redemption, because it uses the same word.
Rewriting history.
No, that's what you said.
No. I said I.
You used that mocking tone too. You said you like that. Yeah, but you
got I did not use the mocking.
You got sincerely
mentioned. I was like, oh, maybe Dan will like this episode because it has math in the title, and Dan likes math. And
you made fun of math.
I mean, I like math too.
You made fun of math.
No, I like math.
I know you were joking.
I'm just not good at I'm not great at math. I'm actually pretty good at math, but I'm not good at the math I want to use. You know, that's the that's the frustrating part where you're like, oh, I can do all this, this, and that. But it's like, oh, I'd like to do this. It's like, oh, that's, I don't know. Right. It's confusing.
It is fucking
there's
confusing.
There's some serious symbols math out there. You think you know some math.
There's no numbers.
There's more math.
The thing about this math equation doesn't have a single number in it.
That kind of math.
The thing about math is you just got to follow a bunch of steps and like one by one and spend like forever trying to get to some kind of conclusion somewhere along the way. And it can be really tedious.
Yeah, well, you simplify it a bit because you also have to understand like the framework of like why you're doing those steps and what direction is going in.
Yeah, math is rad. Math is rad.
I stand behind that.
Rad math.
Assertion.
Reading is jawsome.
Reading is jawsome.
Reading is pretty fucking jawsome.
I have a problem with reading where like I get too enveloped in the minutia, the shit that doesn't really matter, the stuff that I would forget anyways, but I like get involved in it. So like I like read sentences over and over again because I like, it's the same reason why if I watch TV and I have the moat, I often like jump back 10 seconds because I missed the exact way they said. So I think that's some kind of obsessive behavior or something like
it
that.
It could be.
Have you been checked for ADHD?
I don't think I have ADHD, but I did get checked for it, I think, when I was, like, seventh grade, but I was, like...
You can have like, adult-onset version, maybe, or it can emerge in adulthood as well.
Maybe.
You got that super VGA.
Got that super... I'm able to concentrate when I need to, so I'm wondering if I don't have it. I think I'm just, like, overly obsessive about things that don't matter. I mean, that you can sort of gather that from some of my conversations.
Whatever works. Whatever floats your boat. Whatever gets you through the day.
Flutes my boot. I like this. I'm saying that the shaky cam, there's no reason for it, but I like it. I still think it's a fun effect. Yeah. I think it's fun. Some people complain about it, and I think it's fun.
Some people like to shake.
If it's overused, it's kind of shitty. When it's like totally ridiculous, it's shitty. But sometimes when they do that space thing, maybe it's just because I like Battlestar Galactica so much.
But there's
much,
like
I
a
know.
Shaky cam, and then somebody falls off a cliff with a Wilhelm scream.
Yeah. Whoa. And then a hawk comes by.
A bald eagle comes by.
Yeah. A space eagle.
Picks up the dude and rescues him from vacuum freefall with gravity. Gravitational highlights.
I want to watch this movie you're making.
It sounds fascinating.
Wow, I know. It sounds really cool. Yeah. Keeps getting better as I speak.
The
it's unusual that happens.
I know.
Getting back to
I'm really getting in the back, zone tonight.
Getting back to the setting, and the animation, and just that's when you're on the Aurelian, in their little village. You notice there's so much detail and shading in the wood planks and all that other stuff. They're spending a lot of money, putting a lot of effort into making this show
look
better.
Looks like the Ewok village.
Better and better. Yeah, but it looks like a better version.
But like, like built by birds with like nesty.
Built by birds.
Nesty buildings.
Well, and Bilbo Baggins, built by bird. 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 I'm the backward man. And backwards man, I can go back as fast as you can. I'm the backwards man. That was from Freddy Got Fingered.
Yeah. Okay.
So Bilbo Baggins, built by birds.
Dan. So here's the thing. I'm enjoying all this. I think this is great. However, per our conversation of 2 minutes ago, you just might want to call up like the doctor, and I think they can give you like a.
Am I stuck on? Am I doing like some kind of obsessive
Bilbo
stuck?
Baggins, built
I'm
by
just,
birds.
I love you the way you are. I'm not suggesting you go get yourself medicated.
Is this the
and tamp down this exuberance? But it's just something you might want to consider to just get on the page.
Is this the
get down any diagnoses that you might need?
Is this the equivalent of when someone with obsessive compulsive disorder when they before they leave the house they switch the lights on and off 5 times?
Do you switch the lights on
and then they
on
have to wash their
times?
Hands for like an hour? It's like me going like Bilbo Baggins, Bilbo Baggins, Bilbo Baggins, Bilbo Baggins, Bilbo Baggins, Bilbo Baggins. Like I have to do that 3 times.
I don't know if it
I have to
qualifies.
Do that 3 times and then I move on. Otherwise, if I don't do it 3 times, I have to start over from the beginning.
I don't know that it qualifies because you've.
I hope not.
You've never said that phrase before this evening.
But tonight I said it. And now I'm getting, I feel like my heart's going to jump out of my chest unless I say it more.
It does sometimes take you a while to leave your car after you've parked it.
That was a long time ago.
That was just a couple of hours ago.
Were you watching me from your Were you watching me from your deck?
No, I was standing out in the front, and I, you know, I saw you park, and then it took you a while to leave the car, and then you were like doing stuff, standing by the car for a while.
I didn't even know you were there until you yelled out. Well, at me. I was like, "What are you doing?"
I was in my car for a while, but like I wasn't standing by it that long. I just had to get my backpack and shit. But I was in it for a while. I was in the car for a while. But I wasn't like making sure I knew where every piece of garbage was or something weird like that. I was just chilling.
Hey, we're non-judgmental here. Again, whatever gets you through the day, right? Okay.
We're pro Dan.
Should we continue this podcast?
Yes, we should. When they...
We do occasionally do a Star Trek podcast.
When we feel like it. After this, she was talking about the Sky Snake thing.
She?
Peanut Hamper? I'm assuming it's a she.
Yeah.
I think it is.
After she questions, when she's all like, Sky Snake, shouldn't it just be called a snake? And then they cut to the milking of the flying goats. The music there. Now, this is a reference that most people... You won't get this reference. Only I do, because I'm really smart.
Are you sure?
The music reminds me of the music from a video game called Secret...
Silver Surfer.
No, the soundtrack for that is
awesome.
It is
pretty
though.
Fucking rad.
It's like that game for Nintendo is not that great, but like, actually, it's fine. It's
just look
too
up
difficult.
On YouTube. Bible you can do quest. There's a YouTube video that's just the whole Silver Surfer soundtrack from the NES game, the Nintendo Entertainment System.
It's a really good soundtrack. Yeah. It's incredible, actually, for what they do
all
with
right.
it.
Yeah, but it wasn't the Silver Surfer. It was from a different video game.
A game called The Secret of Mana. Which is
I remember that game. Yeah. I never played it.
Yes, I remember it was on the.
But I remember it in the ether.
I remember. No, it wasn't the secret of ether. It was the secret of mana.
The secret of Nim?
No.
The secret of the Kells?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's a really good movie.
The secret of the smell.
It's an animation.
What was the one about like the fire woman and then
fire starter
and then the woman, the wind people, and then the fire basement and.
What are you talking about?
There was like some movie.
About a fire basement?
It was not. What's in a fire basement?
Is that a feature of
it was
houses
in,
now?
No, it was when we were in like first grade, there was a cartoon animated movie, one of those serious ones. But
where they burned people in the basement?
But there was some kind of like giant fire woman person. And it doesn't matter. Anyways, it sounds like Secret of Mana, which I played on the Super Nintendo, and it's reminded me of that music.
Are you talking about David the Gnome?
No,
it's a movie.
Okay, movie. What? How old were we in that? We're say this is 1988. Animated.
That's a very long time ago.
Feature.
How old are you saying in 1988? You are
Fire Woman.
Wait, Fire Woman.
Fire Woman. The list of animated features of 19... Grave of the Fire... No,
Grave of the Fireflies is a great movie, but it is not the one you're talking about.
I don't know. This is not worth me figuring out because this is going to take some real research. So let's move on right, and get
we'll
back to it another
time. Follow up on this whole fire lady thing.
Anyways, it sounded like Secret of Mana to me at that point. The music was really interesting. I liked the music a lot in this episode. The music was like really...
They did
like,
a lot of different things.
It was like all floaty and like old school and felt like you were like being all in some quaint village with some kind of like... Like floaty magic
like,
world,
like with owl people,
owl people.
We've commented on it before, but Star Trek, this new era of Star Trek, has been really strong in the music department.
Mm-hmm.
So even in you know, sometimes you'll have an episode or a series of episodes that you're kind of like, meh, I don't know, but the music has been great. Across the board, they've been stretching themselves a little bit and allowing some more flexibility.
What was going on with the Peanut Hamper? Was she like shooting tennis balls?
Yeah, it seemed like she was just shooting
tennis
balls.
Things. And then like the bird raw dog thought she was pooping. Or something.
Yeah, like what is this?
How can you live in this field?
I will say that because there was the time limitation, you know, which is something we've often talked about with the animated series. I could see how people might say this story was squished a little bit because of the, you know, there's only so much time in a half hour episode, right?
There's 30 minutes.
So that's,
or
that's
less.
That's
and, part and of so the- they so Dan, you were talking about the reliance on tropes. That the reliance on tropes was in part because they needed to go boom 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 and right. get through that whole trope.
And that's why
the trope. That's with the sub tropes.
That's why TNG the TNG like with the episode where Data went down to that
thine own self.
Yeah, I guess that's one with the radioactive shit.
Where we did that one.
And then, we did a podcast on that one.
Yeah, that one.
And then, I love that episode.
And then the one the Inner Light. That's why episodes like that work, because they kind of have a similar sort of concept as this one, but they have more time to explore things. There's no
breathing room.
Yeah, there's no time to explore it. This one they have to hit all the beats. They have to hit all the notes and there's no time to sort of really play around with them, you know. What's it called? Use any grace notes? Yeah. You know, there's no
grace notes.
There's no exploration. It's just kind of like this happened. It's like, okay, when you go to a town, what happens? Oh, they're skeptical of you. Oh, and then you try to learn about their culture. Oh, some people fall in love. Oh, the person who didn't like it at first finds out it's not so bad after all. Oh, they redeem themselves. And
they
then
have like a 2 second Measure of a Man debate about whether or not a machine can be alive.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
You know, like it's literally not even 2 seconds, right. A second and a half. It's like a line and a half, and it's over.
And it turns into like, do what I say. Like,
on the other hand,
I'm the boss.
Oh God, do you remember the last unicorn?
No. Yes, I do, but no.
Yeah,
don't make me remember that, please.
How about The Adventures of Baron Munchausen?
That's a great movie.
That is
a good one. It's an upsetting movie, like most Terry Gilliam movies, but it's a great movie. No, what I was going to say is that the benefit of over-reliance on the tropes and getting through the story quickly is, I think if you had a full hour-long story that ended with the same twist, it might be a more frustrating, even more frustrating twist. It would be harder to maintain the peanut hamper ruse. And, you know, they've already included some clues to her actual behavior that you do notice more once you know the resolution to the plot.
That is true. I notice more.
But if you stretch it out to an hour, you're going to have more clues.
More clues.
But they have to be very hidden.
More clues.
It's not that you couldn't do it, but it would be a challenge, and
you gotta do more.
You could see people being more frustrated by it. I could see that. I'm a fan of this episode.
Frustrated.
But I could see that.
If you had to live on a desert island, it's gotta be a desert. Nothing like, else.
Desert a desert island or a deserted island?
Desert island just means deserted island, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it's just a poetic kind of.
I said exactly what I said.
Fancy abbreviation.
So what's did you have and a you question?
Had to, and you had to.
Are you talking about an arid island?
And you had to watch for every day.
You had to watch ER every day?
No, you had to watch 5 times a day for 2 years, and you had to choose one episode. This one or the Elysium Strange New Worlds episode. Which one would it be?
It's tricky.
What am I going to watch it on?
I might go with this.
That's the problem.
I might go with this one.
Go with this one.
Am I going to make a TV out of coconuts?
So the Elysium it has a twist ending too, which I thought was a powerful, excellent ending. I love that episode. It's a depressing ending though, more so than this one. This one's more like, okay, the person who wasn't asshole at the beginning of the episode is an asshole again, and that's a little disappointing. But it also sets up all sorts of other cool stuff and makes you think about blah, 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 blah. The ending of the Strange New Worlds episode, it's a little more intense, you know? It's also a little perplexing, even though I do like that episode. Like when people, there's some critiques of that episode where I can be like, your critique is valid. I don't care because it was otherwise, it was worth it. Maybe that's how I feel about this episode. It's not like there's no critiques. I can see what people who are not big fans of this episode are. I can see where they're coming from. It's just that I kind of go the opposite way on each of those things. Because for me, I'm so delighted with the producers just going crazy, you know, doing some crazy, weird shit. I want to encourage that. And I'm not saying this is my favorite episode ever of Lower Decks, but I was very impressed with the confidence and surety that this episode was
Nunchaku?
Put together.
Nunchaku.
You're totally. I'm getting all discombobulated here. I'm getting verbally discombobulated.
What's that like?
Due to your.
You said doo-doo.
Verbal incursions.
You said duty years.
Deuteronomy.
Duty or Deuteronomy.
Okay, how about this? Let's do
doo-doo.
One more break.
Let's do the doo-doo.
We'll take another break.
He longed for the touch of her nozzle. He did. That's what he said. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Grow a fucking beak. Another great line. Okay, we'll take a break and then we'll be right back and wrap things up.
Right,
all right.
Right back.
Be right back.
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 Right back.
Da-da.
Da-da. What's that song? It goes like, Timey Kangaroo Down, Sport, Timey Kangaroo Down.
Oh. Isn't it called Timey Kangaroo Down?
Is it Timey Kangaroo, Tie My Kangaroo Down?
Timey Kangaroo Down.
Timey
Kangaroo Down. The, faster than a lizard drinking.
They timey, like it's a, like tie them down?
We've got listeners in Australia.
It's Tie My Kangaroo Down. Yeah.
Hey, they just announced.
Timey Kangaroo Down, Sport. Timey Kangaroo Down.
Yeah, they just announced they're going to do Taskmaster Australia.
Cool.
They already have the very successful Taskmaster New Zealand.
I thought they already had. Oh, it was New Zealand.
Yeah, but now they're doing like Taskmaster Australia.
Don't they have like a Norway or something?
Yes, there's a Norwegian Taskmaster. There's a bunch of them all around, and they do some weird formats in some of them. But I've seen the Norwegian one, New Zealand one, and the UK one.
Norway is not in the EU.
Geopolitical facts with Jesse.
That's a different podcast.
It's got. I would listen to that podcast.
We should do that
podcast. No, you should do that podcast. Oh. It should just you NPR style, just reading a list of facts and then
here are six facts.
Maybe making some comments on them. It would be more successful than this podcast.
This is why these are facts.
That's
what I'm talking.
So. Other things about this episode, anything else that jumped out at you? I did like seeing it. We see Dr. Miggly Moo. We often see Dr. Miggly Moo just sitting on the bridge.
That's cool when you just see him on the bridge like he's Troy.
And he's, you know, but we didn't hear from him. But it was interesting because, you know, obviously we're dealing with this other bird people. And they pointedly did not make any references to Miggly Moo because that would be racist and awful to do that, to be like, hey, you're a bird person. Yeah, right. Do you know anything about these completely separate bird people?
Right. You must know these bird people because you have a beak.
They didn't do that, which is great. On the other hand, I thought that. I was like, I'm glad they didn't do that, which means I was thinking about it because I'm a piece of shit, as it happens.
Well, there's this really creepy.
I don't think he even spoke at all.
He did not. Not a word.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, creepy Dan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I totally got off topic. I was looking for that film, and the closest one I found is called Fire and Ice, which is a 1983 animated
song of
film.
Fire and Ice.
No, it's just called Fire and Ice, and I don't think it's the same one, but it's really freaking me out with some of that animation. That I think it's like a rotoscoped animation. I don't know. Sorry.
Like He-Man.
Yeah, except more awesome, more like animated. So we were talking about Dr. Miggly Moo. Yeah, he didn't talk this episode, did he?
Yeah, because that's an extra actor.
You really weren't paying attention.
I'm sorry. I totally
it's, an extra,
out.
It's an extra actor.
I didn't mean to bring that guy onto the show.
It's all good.
Man. I didn't mean to disrespect anyone. Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's
sorry.
All
good. So she all, don't you think... don't you think she should have asked permission before making all the eggs hatch? She should have asked permission first.
Oh, yeah.
Because they probably have a limited
limited amount of supplies.
There's only so
a limited
many
amount of Reese's peanut butter cups.
There's yes, only so the many person. Worms up in them trees.
Right. So they probably so they have a limited amount that depend.
You think the worms have wings?
Oh, assuredly, sir.
They
and beaks.
Undoubtedly.
Indubitably. They have a limited amount of supplies that depend on their calculation of how many bird people hatch. Basically saying like, oh, we have 40 eggs. We estimate that 20 of them will survive.
Wait. That's too much math.
What So, Dan, I would argue that the point you're making is an important point. It's not 100% solid because it relies on the assumption that these people are already in full equilibrium with their society and that there's no more capacity for the environment to absorb. For example, I'll give you a real world example. You're looking at me like I'm a piece of shit, but I'm trying to give you a real world example. For 200,000 years, there was plenty of room for humans to expand because the environment could handle more humans.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're on the other side of that. It seems
there wasn't
right?
as much poo.
But the point is that there was there was sufficient environmental capacity to handle it. So in that sense,
there's only so much poop. The
there's nothing to say. They do live in kind of a paradise kind of place. Maybe the birds are going to have no problem.
But okay. Then resources aside, just in terms of
it's
like
still shitty.
Okay, resources.
It's still assuming that you're not going to fuck with the environment.
Well, it's shitty to make the assumption. But also, when I say resources, I guess I can mean food, but I can also mean like time that people have on their hands. Because if they have babysitters set out, bird sitters set out for 20 eggs. And then there's 40.
I 100% agree
with. But you're right. There could be plenty of, they could have some kind of, they could have plenty of actual surviving mechanisms.
Who runs Bartertown?
Like the bird.
What?
Master Blaster.
That's right.
Master Blaster. And then Jesse brought up Master Blaster? What are you two talking about?
Well,
Jesse talking about Master Blaster over here.
Why are you getting mad at us because you haven't seen Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome?
I have seen Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, but what does that have to do with Bartertown?
You know how they have those bird seeds?
Who runs like Bartertown?
What is that from?
Lumps of bird seed together, like
it's Master Blaster.
Master Blaster runs Bartertown.
Okay, you've got to go back.
I have. It's been a while.
Master Blaster.
That was one of the weakest Mad Max.
It is weak, but it is worth it for that one line when Tina Turner, who is nominally in charge of Bartertown, and then Master Blaster kind of pulls some shit, takes over, and then they say like, "Who runs Bartertown?" And then she has to say, "Master Blaster."
You know, Master Blaster.
It's great line reading.
Master Blaster is the name of another Nintendo Entertainment System video.
Sound Blaster is the name of a sound card.
Yep, that's the always one you always picked.
I've got one of these right here, except it's external.
Tina Turner is now a citizen of Switzerland. She renounced her U.S. citizenship
for tax reasons. Yes. What are you going to do?
They probably don't have any taxes in Switzerland.
They got taxes, but you can also hide your money better. You can do all sorts of fun stuff.
Oh, word.
Yeah. So, sorry about that digression.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you that Peanut Hamper, all of her interventions are like, she shows up at this planet assuming they are pre-warp civilization. So she already should know, like,
they're post-warp.
If she was proper Starfleet, she would have done everything she could to eliminate and minimize whatever damage she did. She went the opposite direction, which I think is an argument in your, like you were saying, Dan, they're dropping all these hints. That's one of those hints that she doesn't give a shit because she's replicating candy for the children.
She's like Harry Mudd or something.
The same point you made with the birds, with the hatching of the eggs, could apply to the curing the Calcutta guy.
Calcutta guy, right.
Caltaurus?
Caltaurus.
Curing Caltaurus.
You're not talking about Raw Dog?
No, Caltaurus gets bitten by a sky snake. And he's dying from sky snake venom.
He's dying from
and
sky
snake.
And
she replicates a hypospray and cures him because, you know, she was working in the
she's
medical
She's got a replicator
area.
Built in.
She's just that's casually the, replicating that's candy
that's
for people?
Part and parcel of the whole exocomp gig.
Those people don't even eat candy, I don't think.
Well, yeah, they started to.
Yeah, so she not only did she replicate some candy.
They're going to love
Not only
it.
Did she introduce replicators to them, she also made some like foreign candy that might have been hard on their tum-tums.
Probably what on their
considering
gizzards?
They don't have
I bet they got gizzards.
Yeah, of course they have gizzards.
Gizzards. So that's another form of interference that it's serious
candy,
to like have somebody like, not die. You know, like and there's been a million Star Trek episodes that are all about wrestling the debate between whether or not you help somebody, whether it's ethical to help somebody, even if it's going to fuck up their potentially fuck up their society or not. You know, that sort of thing.
We don't know when she officially sold them out to the Drukmani.
Yeah, well, she was there for a while. The implication is that she's there having bird sex for a while.
Bird sex. That was fucked up when the Drukmani came down. They were like, our scans show that valuable material lays beneath your village. We will extract them and leave in peace. And Raw Dog goes, he means the ships of our ancestors. And Cloyterus goes, removing those ships would destroy the trees on which we built for our home. And then this is a part I have a problem with, not the writing in the show, just like I've experienced this one firsthand. When the Drukmani captain goes, it's trash. You have no use for it. So we claim salvage. He is telling them that their shit is garbage.
Yeah.
He has no right to say that.
Your stuff is shit.
I had that happen to me.
You met a Drukmani?
No. Silly. In third grade.
He's describing a human being.
In third grade, I had this friend who I'd go to his house and we played Nintendo, right? And like, and yeah, that's
Get
all we did.
Here.
That's
Get
all
the hell
we did. And so I brought a Nintendo Power to, and he, I brought a Nintendo Power to his house once.
And
that
Nintendo
magazine?
Power was a magazine popular among the youth in the 1980s and early 90s.
It was eventually
supplanted by Game Pro.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran parallel.
I used to have a bunch of episodes of Nintendo Power. episodes. issues.
I got really into Electronic Gaming Monthly after that. But this was issue number 2 of Nintendo Power, which had a picture of Simon's Quest, which was Castlevania 2, on the cover. Oh. I let him borrow it. And then school a few days later, I was like, hey, you got my magazine? Can I get it back? He's like, I lost it. I was like, what the fuck? I was pissed off that he lost it. And then I was like, well, can you pay me back or what? You know, I was like, give me another one or pay me back or something. And then he goes home and he comes back the next day and he's like, I told my dad about it. And he says that magazine isn't worth nothing, so I don't have to give you anything. And I was like, what the fuck?
Like, he made that up.
What? It's like, I don't know. I don't doubt it because I met his dad. His dad was shady. Yeah. But it's like, first of all, it's not nothing. It's like a couple bucks, but I would rather just have the magazine. A
couple bucks in the 1980s was like $500 today.
At least.
His dad probably said that, but he didn't say that about your magazine specifically.
That
dude just overheard it and he was like, my dad said some shit, so yeah, I'm going to tell it to you.
He probably translated it into his own meaning. But I was like,
his own self-serving.
But regardless of like money aside, it's like, well, it's worth enough that I have it in my hands and get to read it. So are you telling me that I am not?
Would you download a car?
I was like, you're telling me that I'm not getting enjoyment from reading this magazine. That's what you're telling me right now.
What happened to this kid?
And then he never fucking paid it back. And like, I was also just like, you know, you don't get to decide what is other people's trash and what isn't. Like, maybe it's worth nothing to you, but it's not yours. It's mine. You don't get to make that decision.
I think you should track him down. Extract the money from him with interest.
This guy is in Congress.
You're trying to tell me that my enjoyment isn't worth anything. Is what he? They felt insulted. Anyway,
I appreciate the analogy to you losing a magazine to a friend. To this culture having their entire civilization ripped to pieces.
It's the same principle.
It is indeed 100% the same principle.
But then that later on, I didn't get this guy Dave back. I got this guy Alex back because one time Alex came to my house and he stole my copy of Castlevania on Nintendo.
The original Castlevania.
And so the school the next day, I was like, hey, Alex, can you give me your phone number? I want to play sometime. So we should hang out some more. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then I took it and I came back. I was like, I know you stole my video game. I'm going to call your mom if you don't give it back. And he's like, okay. And he gave it back to me.
You have to get up pretty early in the morning to put one over on Dan.
Yeah. Damn right, Jesse. I couldn't have said that any better. So far in this episode,
I have tried over the years.
You perfected it. So
I
far,
never get up that early.
So far in this episode, I've mentioned the game Secret of Mana, Quake, Castlevania, Castlevania 2, and Master Blaster.
Master Blaster.
Pinball. What was the pinball game? You know, where
pinball
you
had Wizard.
No, but you know
the Addams Family.
No, it wasn't really a pinball game. Marble Madness.
Oh God! Oh, Marble Madness.
Wasn't a pinball at all.
Fuck that shit.
Marble Madness. Once you got to, I think it was like level 3, it started getting really stressful.
Oh yeah, that was one of those games.
Stressful from the get go.
You rapidly figure out there's no point in playing this. My life will not be improved. No matter how successful I get, and how good I get at this game, my the quality of my life will only go down.
It's true. I remember the music on one of the levels. It was like do 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 do.
Nintendo memories.
I should have a podcast where I just like sing back like Nintendo songs the whole time. Oh, so for all the ideas, that one's no good.
I like the idea of you having a video game podcast.
There's so many video game podcasts already, though.
Well, yeah, but you could differentiate yourself in some way.
By singing Nintendo game music.
You can sing the songs.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just wouldn't want the podcast to only be that.
That's just an hour long.
That would
be
a segment.
That
would
be like a bonus.
Be a segment of
now, I would watch a YouTube channel. You know, like those lo-fi YouTube channels that are just like
lo-fi
chill.
Girl.
Yeah, it's like chill music and like right now it's October, so it's like Halloween lo-fi. Mm. You should have a video game lo-fi, but it's just a camera on you just sitting in your desk chair just belting out Nintendo tunes. I would listen to that. But you got to have like 3 or 4 hours worth of it unbroken.
Oh my gosh. Mm.
All right.
With a jack-o'-lantern.
Other stuff about this particular episode that pops out at you that's worthy of discussion.
The old bird guy had a funny laugh that happened a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah. All the bird business.
All the bird stuff.
The whole bird business and everything having wings.
Whenever they decided to be birds, it was funny.
Yeah.
It was like the
and the fact that they were like kind of owlish type birds instead, you know, and I mean, they were raptors of some sort. Whereas the TAS birds, the Aurelians, are, I mean, they're also like kind of, they got like long beaks and stuff, they're but like they got those flamingos. Long, they got like long necks and like the real full big giant wings.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
They're I know what you're saying.
Silly birds. That's what they are.
So there was a mention of Free Cloud from Picard.
Yeah, yep. That's good.
And because she mentioned she Peanut Hamper would be a Dabo girl on Free Cloud. So that was fun. Yeah. I think it was only Picard that was mentioned. That was where that was invented, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Yeah. They had sex a couple times. We talked about that.
You've mentioned that.
Oh, when she lands on the planet, when she wakes up in the planet, she goes, Ratan? What is? Why did she say Ratan?
Ratan, because they had a lot of woven wood stuff.
It's basket.
Like Ratan, like a Ratan basket or a Ratan couch.
Okay, fair enough.
Ratan, they make percussion mallets out of Ratan.
So. Isn't Ratan, now forgive me because I may be completely ignorant on this, but isn't the difference between Ratan and wicker is that wicker is the round wood woven and Ratan is like the wide, you know, like the difference between like the wide noodles and the round noodles, you know, like the cylindrical noodles.
Right, a flat.
The wide, the flat ones are like your fettuccines and the round ones are more like your spaghettis, right?
Right, or linguine spaghetti. Is a flat.
Yeah, linguine is a flat as well as fettuccine. It's not as wide as
or fettuccine. Like your. I'm thinking like drunken noodles.
Or drunken, yeah. Right.
Versus like some.
Oh, those are
rice
like.
Vermicelli.
Oh, what are those
like
fucking?
Like an Asian noodle.
There's like egg noodles. There's wide ass egg noodles.
Yeah, I forget what those are called.
A broad noodle.
I don't know that I ever knew the name.
Drunken noodles.
No, but I mean the name of the name of the noodle.
Chow fun.
Yeah, chow fun
is one type. That would be a Chinese noodle.
Wow.
Or something. I don't
know. Okay. I think we're...
I'm not a noodle guy. I'm a rice guy.
I think we've exhausted thus far most of our points. Dan's looking like he might have another point brewing.
I was going to mention at the beginning when she was all saying like they wouldn't forget to scan for non-organic life, would they?
Yeah.
And it's like, I was thinking about it, it's like, why wouldn't they? Like, wouldn't they have a package scan going on where they just scan
for
everything?
They usually only scan for organic life.
They are systematically racist.
Yeah.
That is an example and a wonderful example of systematic racism. And if you're watching this show in the culture we grew up in, a lot of us immediately see that and are like, oh no, that's like, that's the gag. The joke is
Federation
she's
hypocrisy.
Assuming they'll care about her her entire class of intelligences. And nope, they didn't think to.
And the thing is it's not even like they would really have to put in any extra effort to do so. They could just include it as part of their scan.
Well, some might argue that there are people who are prejudiced against artificial intelligence Starfleet.
So they're not even, it's not
we
even
see
like.
See that both before and after this era.
So it's not even like they're not thinking of them. They're anti-thinking of them.
Potentially. At the minimum, it's ignorance due to.
At best, it's ignorance.
Organic privilege.
At best.
At best? No, not at best. At minimum.
Organic privilege.
At
organic
best.
Privilege.
I was going to say, at best, it's ignorance. At worst, it's malicious.
Organic privilege. That's you get good. To poop and die.
You can do where's a couple the, other things the along the way. You can listen to some music.
So,
you can have some bird sex. Okay, sure. Bird sex.
But we've seen that plenty of times in TNG with Data and stuff. So, oh, and when she brought down that Drugmani ship, it started playing music that sounded kind of like The Matrix to me as well. So I played some trumpet fanfare going like...
We should bring clips. If we have these types of comments, we should bring clips, I think.
Yeah, we should. Yeah.
I mean, but that would take a tremendous
amount
of effort.
As much as I like you saying...
all right. Does that do it for us this week?
That does it.
Okay. So we hope you...
1 minute, everyone, 1 hour, 15 minutes.
Everyone flap this way.
I hope you enjoyed and got some value.
Oh, right.
That.
Everybody flap this way. That's a good one.
Yeah. It's like that
Aerosmith
song.
That was the captain. That
yeah.
Said
that.
Next week, we will continue. As you may have guessed, we will not shock you. We will continue our coverage, weekly coverage of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3. And next week's episode is called Crisis Point 2, Paradoxus.
How do you know that already?
Because it's on the website.
That would be
it's
episode
on the internet.
8.
It's episode 8. And
why does the internet have it this week but not last week?
No, it did have it last week.
Oh, why didn't it have it the week before?
Because you couldn't find it.
No, I think it had it, but I just forgot to look it up. Lower Decks is pretty good about having episodes ahead of time.
Okay.
All the like Discovery and Picard and stuff, it's a pain in the ass. And Stranger New Worlds was a little bit better, too, about having the new episode title come
it's
out.
It's new soon. Star Trek.
Discovery was real slow about it. I don't know. It's a personal aggravation that longtime listeners of the podcast will be bored by. Because I've brought this up a lot. It's really, and it's a silly thing to be annoyed by, but it is nevertheless annoying. But we need not worry about me being annoyed in this particular episode because they have released it ahead of time and is Crisis Point 2, Paradoxes, which presumably... No guarantees, because these writers like to throw a few curveballs our way.
Zip, zip, zoo.
But it, one coin, might one might balls. Presume that coin this is balls. A follow-up to the Crisis Point episode from was season two, wasn't it? Was it season two that had the Crisis Point episode?
Yeah, what happened in that one? I know there was one called that.
Yeah, it's the one where, you know, where, wow, man, why am I mixing all this up already? You know, where they do the movie. They do the movie
version. Oh, yes. Okay.
So we'll see if, we'll see what the follow-up is on that. Maybe that was first, Jesus Christ, getting old. We're all getting so old.
Yeah, I know.
I'm so old.
Dan's all talking about playing Nintendo Entertainment System.
This is my old voice.
In 1988.
I'm an old 44
years old. I'm not 44.
I am.
Shit.
An old man. An old withered man.
Old and withered.
Patrick used to really be into saying tallywhacker.
Tallywhacker.
I have a withered.
You've got an old shriveled tallywhacker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jesse says all sorts of crazy shit all the time.
That's because he's older than us.
Oh, fuck.
His brain is pre-withered.
Older and crazier.
His brain is pre-withered relative to our brain witherness. Witherliness.
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 That sounds like you're saying wizard with a lift. And,
a withered should know better.
A withered is never late.
A withered is never late.
He arrives precisely when he means to.
Oh shit.
Gandalf.
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 It's my 11th first birthday.
Blow, blow, blackens.
Blow, blow, blow.
Blow, blow, blow.
Bilbo Norton Conjurer.
Bilbo. Was it Bilbo Baggins? Bilbo. What were you saying?
It's my 11th year.
No. Just talking about that fucking verbal vomit you were spewing out earlier.
Bilbo Baggins, Barbara Boobles. What was I saying?
You can't remember what it was.
I can't even remember.
Yeah, I said it like five. You thought it might be a symptom of obsessive compulsive disorder.
I said it like six times in a row and I totally forgot it.
I think it
was it?
I don't think it's. I'm no psychologist. I cannot and would not diagnose you. I certainly don't think in this case it's OCD, which of course is very serious.
I don't throw around that
term. I
think
you have some sort of psychotic mania, which is maybe worse.
Well, I don't throw around the term OCD casually because, like, you know, it's a real thing. You know?
No, for real. It's a mega serious real thing. Which you may have, but
I may have,
but you're undiagnosed. Mm-hmm. But you may also have a psychotic mania, like where you take brief breaks from reality and start screaming.
Oh yeah, fugue states. Is that what they call it?
Yes, because Fugue. Audience. This is.
Well, I can't remember. It was Bilbo. Yeah, I totally blacked out because I don't remember what I said.
Bilbo Baggins.
It's important to convey in these concluding moments of the podcast that. That this is Dan does this. This is the microphone is not causing this. this is what you get. And these are further examples of what you get if you get to hang out, sit around with Dan, which is exciting and wonderful. It's a treat. It's a treat.
Aww.
Every opportunity is a treat.
Aww.
And we hope you think that every opportunity to listen to the It's Got Star Trek podcast is a treat.
Nice.
Segue. So with that, we wish you all the best until the following week, the week that follows this one. I don't know. It depends when they listen. Not everyone's
next
listening.
Week. Next week.
A lot of people download and listen right away, but like a bunch of people, they're like, oh, it's Friday after the next episode is aired. It's about time to listen to the It's Got Star Trek podcast episode from the previous week.
I like how there's that dude that like mows the lawn and like listens to our podcast.
I'm sure there are multiple people who fit that criteria. We've only heard from the one person, but there are no doubt multiple people who do that. But anyway, that's beside the point. Do whatever you want, listen in whatever fashion and at whatever time you like. The episode following this one in the playlist will be about Crisis Point 2 Paradoxes.
Phew.
And though for you, especially you folks in the future, There will be no time between these episodes.
Future vote.
They will appear. They will have access to them simultaneously. Despite that fact, in the real world, there is going to be time happening in between now
what the
and
fuck
then.
Are you talking about?
I'm just trying to explain that we do wish them a nice week.
He's getting real deep.
Yeah, the problem is, I'm trying to also accommodate for the many people who will listen to this at a later date, in which time
you're trying too hard, man.
Evergreen.
Yeah, exactly. Evergreen. These are evergreen podcasts. That's why we talk about Nintendo so much. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Or the next episode. Okay, bye-bye.
God damn it.
God damn it. Bye-bye.
Impossible.
Oh, Peanut Hamper, I can't help but be full of song when I'm with you.
Oh.